everyone. Thanks for joining us today. This is Angela with the podcast Refocus with Angela Stevens. I am so excited to introduce our guest to you today. She is known as a parent coach. She's a specialist in parenting neurodiverse kids. We're going to learn a lot about that today. She has gotten her PhD in research cognitive psychology, and her name is Dr. Sarah Whalen. So Dr. Whalen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You're so welcome. So we're going to jump right in because I've got so many questions for you, as so many of our listeners do. But talk to us, first of all, about parenting neurodiverse kids. So a lot of people may know what that means and some may not. So can you explain what that means to parent neurodiverse kids?
Neurodiversity is a term that's coined for kids who have differently wired brains. So it's often, most often I hear it in the context of things like dyslexia, ADHD, autism, learning differences. So those are some conditions that are called neurodiverse. But the idea is that they're not, I don't know, what's normal? Who knows what normal is, right?
Exactly.
So I don't like saying they're not normal because frankly, they are normal. It's just a different type of normal.
Challenging. I have one of them. So yeah, I'd say you can have challenges, right? With any kid.
So what is normal, you know? And the real issue is that the world has been created for people who don't have these neurodiverse brain wirings. And that's what makes it hard for our kids to function in the world. If we would wire, if we had environments that were friendly to them, they would be able to function much more effectively. So it's really about a mismatch between who the environment was created for and how our kids function most effectively.
Right. Absolutely. So, and then moving forward, you are a parent coach. And I love that because we get a lot of questions that come in from our website, which if you're listening to this and you do have a question for any of our guests, you just go to Refocus with Angela and you can send us a note there. But many of the questions that we get are, you know, do you have coaches or counselors that are specialized in a certain area? And when I heard that you did, that you were a parent coach, I love that because I think that me as a parent, I was a single parent for 10 years, but I think any parent needs help along the way at some point, whether you've got a child with ADHD or just regular, because we have life stresses that come into play.
Well, we have life stresses and we also have what we come to the world with too, you know, so we have our own backgrounds, we have our own neurodiversity, and that can have an impact on our ability to parent our kids. And so, you know, one of the things that I found when my kids were young, and they're both neurodiverse, is that my husband and I were working so hard to figure out how to support them. And we could find one or two people who are just amazing about helping us. Thank heaven for them.
Right.
Some parent support groups that we were part of. So we were meeting other parents who were traveling the same path we were. And that was super helpful, but I had questions. And it was hard to figure out what was going to work for my kids, because every kid is different. Even my two kids, even though they share genetic material, like they are really different people. And trying to figure out what would be best for, you know, my older son, as opposed to my younger son, it turned out they were totally different. And, you know, I thought, oh, I figured it out with the first one. So we've got the second one, except he's a different person. And so, no, we didn't have the second one. We had to figure him out too.
In terms of parent coaches, so in terms of a regular coach versus a parent coach, what do you do? What services do you provide? Because I know there's other coaches who do this to similar coaching, but give us an example of, number one, the types of person that there are the individuals that will come to you, and then what are their concerns?
So there's lots of concerns. So like I said, it's parents of neurodiverse kids. So a lot of ADHD, a lot of autism, definitely dyslexia and other learning disabilities. They come to me in different ways. So one way they come to me is I teach a parenting class called Parent-Child Journey, which was developed by a local developmental pediatrician named Dr. Dan Shapiro. And I taught that parenting class before he brought it online during COVID. And I taught a section of it. And so people would come to my parenting class, and I called it Parenting 201. So like Parenting 101 is like, you know, what you think you know, and, you know, maybe you pick up a book on parenting or whatever, but then you realize, my kid isn't responding in the way that these books say they should be responding, and what's going on with that? And so you come to Parenting 201. And so we had a lot of strategies and ways of getting to know your kid and understand them. And so what would happen at the last session of that 10-session class was, okay, you've tried all these amazing strategies and things still aren't going so well, like now what? And so the last class is, you know, what do you do? Like if your kid is really sensitive to bright lights, like how do you get help for that? Right. So, so that's just, you know, a really silly little example, although it doesn't feel little when your kid is screaming in the sunlight.
No. And I think one of the biggest things is challenging is being calm, you know, cause I you know, what is it when they yell and they scream, it makes us want to yell and scream, and then they yell back, and then you've got a war going on. Right.
Yep. I call that the cycle of crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, and we're wired to do that, right? Like we're wired to reflect what our kids give to us. And you're right, it is not helpful. And so one of the things you have to learn is how to stay calm in the moment.
So so give us that advice. Let's say if you've got a teenager at home and that, you know, you ask them to help with the dishes or something, and then they yell at you, and then you're like, no, because I said so, or whatever, you know, whatever. So how does a parent do that? Give us a little bit of a tip of what you suggest.
Well, it depends. There is a concept that I actually teach in the very first section of that parenting class I mentioned. It's a concept called the rumble rage cycle. And the idea is how out of control you are over time, right? So let's say your kid's going along and they're feeling pretty calm. Okay, calm, calm, calm. And then you ask them to empty the dishwasher. And so that's like a little bit of a trigger for them. And they're like, I was in the middle of, you know, talking to my friend.
A game.
Yeah. A game or whatever, right? I was doing something and you're interrupting me. So they're starting to ramp up. Now, if you can, in that moment where they're starting to get dysregulated, you know, just say, oh, do you need to finish with your friend? Or do you need to get a good stopping point in your game? If you can figure out what they're upset about, like, then they'll calm back down, it'll be fine. But if you don't, and you keep after them with something, right, they're going to get more and more upset. And then they're going to go past what I call the point of no return. And so that might be a full on blowout, right? So if you keep pushing really hard, and I'm not saying, by the way, that you shouldn't ask your kids to do things, but what you might want to do is pause. Just take a pause and a break and wait for things to calm down again. And then after they're calm, and that can take different amounts of time for different kids. So some kids will calm down after 30 seconds and other kids, it might be the next day. So it just really depends. But when they're getting irrational and mad at you, if you can just stay calm and kind of, you know, say, oh, you're upset, right? The less language you can use, the better. And then when they get back down to calm, you can say, so I really just needed you to empty the dishwasher. Like, how can we work this out? Right.
And
right. But in a non-confrontational way. So you still have the expectation that they're going to empty the dishwasher. It's a reasonable expectation. Right. But at the same time, you need to keep calm. And not contribute to that cycle of crazy. I'm a big fan of the raised eyebrow.
Yeah, I love that. Well, you know, something that's happened with us recently was we had the same situation going on. And I said, look, no one is going to yell at each other in this household. And we're not going to do it. That includes me.
Yeah.
And that includes my husband. And that includes you. Okay. So we're not going to do that. And then, you know, if they keep yelling, I say, okay, we're not going to do that. All right. We're not, or they'll, you know, walk away. So then the next day I'd say, hey, you know, I want to talk to you because that won't work. You know, we are not, including me, I'm taking responsibility here too. You know, I lost my cool. That was not okay.
Right.
And I'm going to work on this too. And there's something about when you get on their level and talk to them as they're human beings, right? And not parenting. There's something, especially in that adulthood, there's a transition that I've noticed. I don't know if it's right with everyone else, but I've noticed, but you know, we're a work in progress as well.
Yes, we are. We sure right? are. And,
yeah. So tell us when the, you know, you mentioned the word helicopter parent, right? So Is that still going on? I mean, do you see a lot of people still doing that? I mean, it's just human nature, a lot of it, right?
Oh, that's such a complicated thing, because in my experience, most parents helicopter when they're worried about their kid, about something that's not going well for their kid, right? Yeah. And so I view helicoptering as a symptom that the parent is worried about something. Mm-hmm. And if you can address what they're worrying about, they stop helicopter. Parents don't want a helicopter. They don't want to be like that. Now, there are a few, very few people who do. And so don't get me wrong. There are some parents who are like that. I don't know any personally. What I find is that parents who helicopter are concerned about things where their kids' needs are not getting met. And they really want, you know, the school. Very often school is the source of a huge amount of stress for our kids and parents. Right. And parents get these really mixed messages. So the school will say, we want you to be really involved with your child. And then they say, hey, back off, mom, you're being too over-involved. And you're like, well, where's the balance there? Like, what am I saying? What kind of involvement am I supposed to have? But, I'll just use my older son. He has a lot of trouble like getting organized, right? Mm-hmm. So just keeping track of his materials, keeping track of his homework, remembering to turn it in, just stuff like that. Really, really hard for him. And he really needed additional support. He's 23 now, and he actually is starting to remember to do those things. So it was a development.
It just takes 23 years. That's it. Just 23 years.
And, you know, kids with ADHD are, it takes longer for them to develop those skills, right?
Right.
And so you kind of just have to hang on a little longer. Yeah. Okay. You're 18 and you're an adult now, but that does not mean your brain is, you know, fully online and your frontal lobes are all connected up with the rest of your brain, right?
Exactly. And if any teenagers or parents are listening to this, I just have to share that this just happened this past weekend. We were traveling, we were at a hotel and we were at a pool, and my son was sitting over by himself and, you know, on his phone or something. And we saw these kids in the pool and they were telling us, they said they were ADHD, and I'm not sure how that came up. And I said, I have a question for you. I said, do you ever forget your stuff like for school, like when you're back in session, you ever forget? And they both said, all the time. And I said, do you ever forget to turn in your assignments? And they go, all the time. And I looked at my son and I said, hey, I said, did you hear that? And he sits up and he said, welcome to the club. And that's all he said. And that made those kids so, they just started laughing, because it just shows that, you know, it just, they have some challenges, right? That many people may or may not do, but for anyone listening to this, when those kids have challenges, even regular, if there's such a thing as regular kids, they have their challenges as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, with social media and other things as that. Talk to us, since you are a parent coach, I'm going to ask you a few questions. So I'm going to give you an example and you can kind of give us an idea. So if you have a couple that comes into you, and one person is maybe softer and one is more strict, and I'm sure you've seen this, right? And they have a kid and there's some disagreement. They might parent together, but one is more strict and one is more soft. There has to be some conflict with that between the parents. So what do you suggest when that happens?
Well, first of all, it's super common. And, you know, one of the things I always say is it takes a village to raise a kid. It really does. And part of the reason is kids need to learn to work with different types of people, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if one parent is more strict, like let's say the mom is the more strict parent, then the kid has to learn, you know, how to navigate life with mom. And if dad's the more cuddly, you know, fun loving, you know, forgiving person, then the kid has to learn how to interact with that person as well. And I find, you know, opposites do attract. So this dynamic is super common, where one parent, I call them the fist of power parent, and then the other parent is like, oh, everything's, you know, sunshine and roses, and they're just perfect the way they are. We don't need to do this. And it's a balance, you know? So these are two extremes and they're pulling each other somewhere towards that middle. And so what I tell parents is you have to just like talk to each other and mm-hmm. come to some discussion, you know, some agreement about what both of you can live with, not with the kid involved, right? From the kid, like get mm-hmm. a plan, never contradict each other in front of the kid, because they'll play you off against each other for sure. But if you can come up with sort of a plan of attack, and then you just say, this is the way it is, you know, your dad and I have talked, and this is what we think needs to happen here. And then back each other up. It's really important that the parents be on the same page. And if you disagree, so my husband and I have some sign language we use, like I do one where I draw my finger across my throat real fast, like, cut. So if he's like he's the stricter parent in our family. And if he's doing that, like I'll stand behind the kid and I'm like, you know.
Oh, that is funny. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, you're exactly right. It is a very common thing. And, I was a single mom for 10 years. Right. And so when I got remarried, my son was 10 and my husband, I find that people more than not is that they parent as they were parented.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. My parents, my mother was stricter, but they were great parents. And I couldn't have asked for better parents, but my dad was the really soft one and really kind. And here's my husband now who's more stricter. And I was like, wait, what, you know, what's going on?
You're supposed to be the soft, kind one.
That's right. But what I find is when we got married, I said, you know, I am divorced and my son has a dad and it's important that we co-parent together, but that we're on the same team. And it's so important about that. And still to this day, we just kind of, you know, when we tell our child, we say, we make our decisions together. And that's it. And he knows, because, you know, the playing off the one and the other, you hear that a lot. It's true. If you haven't experienced it, it happens. But you have to manage that. You know, you have to say, look, we're not going to do this. And fortunately, you know, my ex-husband gets along with my husband now, and people see us when we go to the orchestra concerts or whatever, we all sit together. And it's not about us, right? It's about the kids. It really is. It took me a long time to realize that. But at the end of the day, I try to look through his eyes.
And something you just said is so wise. This is our kids' journey. It's not our mm-hmm. journey.
That's right.
It's our mm-hmm. kids' journey. And we're there to, you know, act as a guide and to help them navigate it. But in the end, they're the one traveling the path, not us.
That's right. And when my son was very young and we were early in our divorce, my brother pointed out something because we were at a soccer game and my ex-husband was sitting at one end and I was sitting at the other end. So when our son would make a goal or whatever, he would run to one side and then feel like he had to run to the other. And my brother mentioned, he said, you know, he seems confused on who he's supposed to run to.
Yeah.
And that was it for me. And I was like, oh, that will never happen again. And so, you know, you wow. suck it up and you behave. You know, as adults should, right?
Right.
But it killed me when I heard that, because I was like, I didn't realize that, you know. So, you know, when people do give you advice, sometimes it's good to listen.
Yeah. And your brother, I mean, thank heaven he saw that and felt he could say something, because in the end that served your son so much better.
It did. And he didn't say it to me like you should, you know, if you think about it, the way he said it, he didn't say like, you guys need to do this. He just said, I feel like your son is confused on who to run to.
Yeah.
So he wasn't blaming anyone. He was literally making
an observation. Yeah.
And now, like I said, when people see us tennis matches or whatever sitting together, they feel it's so odd. And somebody said, you know, that's got to be odd. And I said, no, it's the way it should be.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, you hope you make an impact, you know, moving forward. So, but moving on, I want to ask you a couple of questions about you. So, how did you get to where you're at now? Cause I'm always interested in people's journey and what they did. So how did you know that you wanted to go into this field?
It is a really good question.
You didn't expect that question, did you?
I did not, but It's it was a journey for me. So I started out as a researcher. I mean, I got my PhD and studied how people process spoken language. And I did research on that, and especially with people who had had strokes and were having trouble processing language after stroke. And so I knew a lot about language acquisition and so on. And then I left academia and went to work in software, and I was using what I had learned in research to design software. And then I had my kids, and as I mentioned earlier, they're both neurodiverse, and it was very hard for me to figure out how to help them. And with my training and background, I should have been totally clued in about how to do that. And it was really, really hard. And I thought, well, goodness, if it's this hard for me, it's gotta be hard for other people too. And so I always say my purpose in life is to make sure no other parent feels as lost and confused as my husband and I felt. That is my mission.
Wow, that's a great mission, really, because you're really the first person that I've talked to about this, and we've had over 55 episodes in a year. So that's really, that's great. And thank you, first of all, for doing this, because I think, you know, what you do is so important. But I do want to mention to our audience before this podcast started, we have, Sarah and I have something very much in common. I wanted to share a little bit about what happened to me, and she can share a little bit about what happened to her. But when as many people know, my son was diagnosed with ADHD in the fifth grade. I was a single parent for 10 years. It was very challenging because he wasn't on the mid level. He was on the high level. And so there were challenges as we went along. And so when I'm 52 now, and when I was 45, my son was doing my advertising work for doing a lot of like hats, cups, chargers for my executive search firm. And we were looking for a different product to manufacture. And he was irritated with me because I was forgetting names. I was forgetting meetings. I was forgetting appointments, places I needed to be. I was forgetting my passwords. I wasn't myself. And I thought I was getting early onset dementia. And I went to my doctor and I said, I know my grandmother had Alzheimer's. I just really feel like I'm getting dementia. And so we did testing and everything, and voila, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And they found out I was diagnosed with ADHD myself, which made a lot of sense, you know, and it helped me to understand my son even better at that time. But then we also did testing, and I had had a hysterectomy. So I was going through postmenopausal and I didn't know it. And there's a neurodiverse sensory that goes off when that happens to some women, and it happened to me. So it was neurological, and that's why. And so, you know, with medication and help with that, we got straightened out. I'm all good now, you know. So, but that happens. And a lot of people think they're going crazy or that they're getting Alzheimer's, right? And Sarah, that happened to you as well, right?
It sure did. So many years ago, I'd say I was probably about 40, maybe late 30s, early 40s. And I, you know, because I have neurodiverse kids, I was, of course, going to like every talk I could go to learn more about ADHD, autism, whatever. And I got to go see Russell Barkley, who's like the, you know, father of ADHD research or something. And he was talking about ADHD, and just kind of a throwaway comment. He said, oh yeah, you know, these postmenopausal women, you know, they, a lot of them are getting diagnosed with ADHD as the neuro, and his words were, the neuroprotective effect of estrogen trickles out of their system. And I took note.
We're in a group, Sarah. Now we're in a group. So
and so I took note because I was not postmenopausal at that time, but I actually did have actually a pretty rough perimenopausal period where I get migraines, and my migraines got
many women do
really bad. So I actually had like hemiparesis, like half of my body was paralyzed when I would get them. And and so, you know, my neurologist was like, well, you know, this is all migraine stuff. He said, hopefully what will happen is after you're through menopause, the migraines will go away. Well, instead, what happened is they got worse. And then I started forgetting stuff. I started having a really hard time managing everything. I had started my own business by this time. And my mother also has dementia. And one of the things that had happened to her is she had been you know, we knew something was up and we went to get neurological testing for her. And they were like, oh, well, she's average. She's fine. Which at that point we realized how smart she must have been because we felt she had slipped so far. And so I just said to a friend of mine who's a neuropsychologist, I said, you know, I need to get baseline testing so that, you know, in 10 or 15 years, like if I'm starting to slip, there's something to measure against. So she did testing on me and I was diagnosed with ADHD inattentive type.
Right. Yeah.
And so, at the age of 57 or 56, I guess I was diagnosed with that. So, and it's funny because, you know, you look back at your life and you're like, oh, that makes sense. Now that makes sense.
Many times, many times in my grade school, I can remember that as well. So, and you know, we didn't have the support that we have now, even though we still got a long way to go. Right. But we, it's very interesting how we adapted and had to get other ways of doing
compensating
things. And, you know, and I have three businesses. That's all I can think of that it made me do that. Cause I could do, you know, things like multiple things at once, you know, so, and enjoy it, you know, so, but, that's great. And I would say to anyone, and I think you probably agree with this, Sarah, that if you're listening to this and you're a woman who's going through that and you think you're getting dementia or something, but talk to your doctor. And if your doctor doesn't listen to you, find another doctor. That's the key. I had a physician who did not have my interest for many years, didn't realize it. And I think we were raised with this. When you go to a doctor, you trust, you know, if they said this, this is what it is. But in today's world, with the research that we have, there's many doctors that have compassion. And if they don't show you that compassion, find one that will.
Well, that is so important. And actually, part of my journey was this neurologist who was getting me through my migraines. When I got the diagnosis from the neuropsychologist, I sent it to him and I said, you know, this explains a lot of the stress I'm feeling right now, just trying to manage things. Because you do have to develop, like what happened to me is I had to develop really different ways of managing myself than I had to previously. And he said, well, you're functioning fine. You don't need help. And meanwhile, I was having, like, I was freaking out all the time because I felt like everything was slipping away. And so finally I went to a psychiatrist and gave her the report. And she said, no, you have ADHD. You really need help. And it was, I'm so grateful to her. So yes, your point is spot on.
Yeah. So grateful. I remember, I think I was very irritable at the time. And I was frustrated at myself. And so I was honestly probably, you know, being really short with my husband and my child at the time. And, I'll never forget. I was sitting on the deck and I was in tears because I didn't know what was going on. And my husband came out and sat with me and he's very calm. And he said, this is different. He said, what's going on with you? This is different. You should talk to somebody. This is not you. And I'm so grateful for him and for my doctor at the time, because then I went to her and she goes, you are right in the throes of this. She realized that. And I was like, well, that makes sense now. So yeah. So it's important that you have people in your life that surround you, that lift you up and have your best interests as you do theirs. And I think that's so important. And I think many women, sometimes we don't talk about this. We don't talk about menopause. We don't talk about this, but it's so connected with the neurodiversity area that it's really important. I think your point is spot on. You know, it's interesting. I think I could talk to you all day, Sarah. You have got so much great experience. And one thing I wanted to mention about you is you're also, you know, you're a speaker. You take patients nationwide because you can do televisits, right? You're a parent coach as well, but you're also certified relationship development intervention consultant. Can you tell us what that means?
Sure. It's an intervention that was created for parents of kids who have autism. So one of the things that happens when your kid is autistic is that the way they take the world in is different than how non-autistic people do. And if you have a baby, I'll just use an example from my second son. For him, holding him and bouncing him and patting him did not comfort him. Right.
So this the touch. Thing,
yeah, the touch was really hard for him to process. And so the very thing that I thought I was supposed to do to comfort him actually made him more upset.
That probably did it more as well, right? I mean, trying to think you needed to do that.
Well, you know, you do figure things out over time. But so let's just take that as an example. If he's upset and I'm touching him and he's getting more upset, then you put him down because, right, you're desperate to try anything, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, but one of the things that happens is the thing that bonds us to our children is things like touch and things like, you know, talking to them or whatever. And when your kid responds in a way that doesn't make sense to you, then you feel like you can't be a good parent to them. So it has an impact on that guiding relationship. And so RDI is about restoring that guiding relationship by helping you as a parent understand this is what's going on for my kid. It does not mean they don't love me. It just means they process the world differently than I do. So we educate the parents and then we work with them to figure out how they can support their kids so their kids can, you know, grow up to be connected and have friends and you know, and for me, the thing that's so powerful is just that restoring the guiding relationship, because that is often broken. Because the two people don't know how to interpret what's going on for the other.
Exactly. You know, and as you know, we just wrote two guided anxiety journals, one's for adults and one is for young adults. And the titles are Refocusing on Your Journey and Focusing on Your Journey. And what you just said just really hit home with me, because it is a journey for them and for us, right? And even I could say this is a common thing, that even if you have a rocky relationship with your child, whether it's a teenager or adult, it can get better, right? It does take time, does take work, but it can get better, right? I think some people think, you know, just cut it off and that's it. But, you know, there is solutions with people like yourself.
Right. And the first key really is to be respectful of the other person and what their experiences may be and validate that. And try to understand what their perspective is. I just think that's like the foundation.
Compassion.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, well, like I said, I could talk to you all day long, but you've been so great. But I do have one question that I ask all of our guests, and it's so important. But, you know, you do speaking and you know, we're all human and we have our off days and everything. But when you're going to an event or a place that you're going to speak or meet or do something that's really important and you've got to have game on, what is the music that you listen to when you get in your car and you're going to that meeting? What is the genre, the artist, or the song that comes to mind?
So I actually play Schubert's Unfinished Symphony. It's very relaxing and calm.
I'm writing this down. I love it. Okay. Really? Okay. And it's relaxing, or is it get you pumped up or what?
No, I don't need help being pumped up.
I love it.
I always need help calming down. So
just it keeps you calm, right? Okay. Yeah. I love that. It's been such a blessing to know you and to understand your background. And I know you're going to help many. When this comes out in the next couple of weeks, we will put a link on our website to reach Sarah if you're interested in speaking with her. And take it from me, she is a joy to work with, to speak with. And I've just met her and I feel like I've known her forever. So you have a great personality and you're very open and easy to talk to. So I think anyone that gives you a call or emails you, it's going to be one call they'll never regret.
Thank you, Angela. It's been great to talk with you.
You're so welcome. All right. Thanks again. We appreciate it. This podcast is brought to you by Refocus the Creative Office. If you know someone that's graduating this spring, make sure to check out our website at time2refocus.com. We've got academic calendars, annual calendars, to-do lists, legal pads that match those calendars. We've also got our brand new college, university, and scholarship timeline sheets. We've got password books now in 11 versions. And lastly, we've got our new guided anxiety journals. So as you're sending away your student to college or graduating this spring, we've got everything you need, and you can give a gift that they will treasure all year long.